Hello, welcome to the Millionaire Woman Show, where we'll be discussing leadership, business, and human potential, inspiring you to live rich from the inside out. Unlock your creativity, stretch out of your comfort zone, break through your barriers, take inspired action, and achieve epic results. Now, here's your host, two-time best-selling author, speaker, and certified executive coach,
Deborah Kozowski. Hello, everyone. It's Deborah Kozowski with the Millionaire Woman Show, and we are so excited. Our guest today is Robin Hatcher, and we are going to be talking about speaking and stepping up your game and getting those standing ovations. So Robin's lightning captured in a bottle that zaps you into a new way of thinking. Everyday communication is like mixing up chemicals. Sometimes it creates exciting discoveries, and sometimes it just blows up. Robin Hatcher, communication expert and author, knows successful communication is the lifeblood of any thriving organization. Robin's cultivated a formula for transform weak communication into potent business gold. Her 15-year plus as a professional actress and her experience as a certified neurolinguistics programming practitioner give her a powerful combination of creative tools and scientific research. Now, as owner and CEO of Speak Etc., she delivers the brain science hacks that help business leaders command a room, galvanize a team, and become a catalyst for change. Robin has elevated the communication skills of Fortune 500 companies and noteworthy brands, including Lifetime Television, Jones New York, AXA, UBS, Hewlett-Packard, and others. Robin's first book, Standing Ovation Presentations by Motivational Press in 2013, contains unique communication style called Actor Types and was named on Forbes.com as one of 2015's top 100 coaching books. Robin wants everyone to become more powerful, engaging, and confident communicators. Robin, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Deborah. It's a pleasure. I'm excited.
So knowing that you have a background, I was telling everybody all about it. Here it is, Law and Order.
Oh.
It's some of the background, because I remember seeing you on there. And then when I saw that, the progression of your career, it's exciting that you're teaching communication and sharing that with many other people.
Right, exactly.
So, why are you passionate about teaching communication?
Well, there are many reasons, and it starts with, it's funny, one of the things I teach when I teach branding and about finding out yourself, it's like, go back to when you're 8 years old, and there's a seed of who you are today. And that seed started when I was 8 years old, because I was still being called shy as a child. That was my nickname. I was literally called shy. And so I just remembered how much like a straitjacket it felt like to be in this place where I couldn't communicate because I had a label on me and because I was afraid of one thing or afraid of another. And as I progressed and I got a little bit less shy, and at one point, all of a sudden, it all coalesced, and I was teaching English as a second language to adult foreign learners. And I was teaching them, and they were learning grammar, and they were learning the vocabulary. And I started getting frustrated because I saw in them that same frustration that I had as a child, because they would go out in New York City and not really be able to communicate. And just like as a child, I couldn't communicate. And I just, all of a sudden, I thought, you know what? I want to help these people so much. And that's when I developed this whole public speaking platform and formula and system to help them become better communicators. And in the course of doing that, I really fell in love with that art of communication and realized that that was my calling all along, is like just to open it up so that people could feel more comfortable communicating.
So that leads me into just hearing what you're saying. When we talk about labels, how do you think, when you've taught these classes and gone and done these workshops, what kind of labels have you noticed people carrying with themselves?
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of times it's like it's clearly negative labels, like shy is negative. But you can also start to fall into a trap of being oh, you're the direct one, or you're the funny one, or you're the really super organized one. So whenever somebody is pigeonholed into one particular type, it then becomes a label that then sometimes you have to struggle to get out of. And we're all very different in different ways and different different situations. We can come up with a whole different type of personality. And so what I find the most is those people that so many people relate to having been called shy or being thought about as shy. That is the one, number one. Other ones are, and lately I've been having the ones with the females especially who are not shy. And then they get labeled too direct, you know, or too aggressive, when actually what they're being is being assertive. You know, so it's very interesting what happens with our personalities and the labels and then what we choose to do with them. So those are the two ones. Like shy is really huge. And that's most of the one I see. And then you have the whole other end of the spectrum.
And do you find with the labels that people are unable to shift from saying I'm told I'm humorous or I can't be smart and humorous? I can't be both?
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like is broadening, not being able to broaden your horizons and being able to play all the notes in your orchestra. You know, because we all have so many different notes. And when you're locked into playing that one note that people expect you, and that also goes to the fact of we're then performing or being according to other people's expectations and not being present and not being in the moment. And when you're not in the moment and being present, that's cutting off so much of the beautiful notes that are inside of you, because what you're doing is you're just being a reflection of what your expectation, what you think other people's expectations are. So that's one of the, that is a huge issue that happens. And reversely too, it's like a lot of people's like, I'm smart. I'm really, really smart. So I can be a good public speaker. You know, I feel like a lot of people get locked into that. I know a lot of that technology. So I don't need to be engaging I can't be engaging. And that's just as destructive a label or a box as anything else.
So what do you do to help people move from their labels to who they are meant to be, to step in their greatness?
That's one of the ways that I really use the neuro-linguistic programming. And I will ask people what it is that they want to see, who it is that they want to be, and really create. Sometimes I will give my clients and the people in the room an exercise of creating what I call an avatar of yourself or an alter ego. So, okay, yeah, this is me shy, and that's how I got out of it through my acting, because, like, this is me shy. I couldn't even imagine myself not being shy. So what happened with me was I started acting in high school, and I just threw myself into the deep end and started acting in high school. Then there was a role, there was a character that I could step into, but then I said, oh, that person's not shy. Maybe that'll have a little bit of effect on me. And that's what is available to all of us, because our imaginations are so powerful. Our minds are so powerful. Our minds are so connected to our bodies and our emotions. So that if you can imagine another you, then what happens is that part of your brain will then start to reconnect the neurons in a whole other way. And it'll start reconnecting in a way that says, oh, yeah, you know, that's a possibility. I never thought of that possibility. And the more you act as if, and the more you keep that imagination strong and clear, and I have people go through the whole thing. Like sometimes, what is your name? You know, what is the other person's name? You know, it's like, what's your avatar's name? It's not the same, because that's not, may not work. And I always bring up the Beyonce story, because that whole character of Sasha Fierce was born with her, because she's incredibly shy. You know, and so she was incredibly shy, and she couldn't imagine doing what it required of her to do to become a pop diva as she is. So she created Sasha Fierce, who had no problem going on stage and doing that. You know, so that becomes that whole way of how you can get over it. So it's a really great technique.
Great. Thank you, Robin. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to communication, what is one of the greatest challenges that leaders are facing in their businesses and organizations today?
Yeah, one of the greatest challenges I find in most leaders is that they try to do so much and forget that business and leadership is about one-on-one personal emotional engagement. And so case in point is like for leaders that they think in order for them to lead, they have to stand in front of their people and give them all this information, data, information. And what they really need to do is stand in front of their people and say, I care about you. I care that you need to grow this. And in caring about those people, their people will then care more about the business and the business will flourish. I feel like what most people fail to do is get in touch with the emotional needs of their audience or prospect, their clients, their people. And that is an epidemic because we're taught to think that stuff matters, you know, what happens matters, the data matters, the sales matters, the numbers matters. And what really matters is the connection. And so I feel like that's our biggest issue. And not realizing that communication is such a large part of that.
Yeah. And I think sometimes when we think of communication, we always think it's the oral part. But what is the key to clear, concise communication when it comes to oral or written?
Yeah, oral or written. The main thing is figuring out what your bottom line is. So many times you realize that you start writing from this, and then there becomes this cloud. It just had this image of, you know, like, what is that comic when you're running and then there's this cloud of stuff. But underneath, there's actually a person, you know, there's actually a point. And so one of the things that we have to do is figure out what that point is and start from there. Because we fill in all this, oh, maybe an if and can and that we could and wouldn't it be nice? And you pull in an information from here and you pull in information from there. And you forget that the bottom line is, this is what I want the person to do, you know? And so you start there. This is what I want the person to do. This is what I want the person to think, feel, do, know, or understand. You know, those are the five things that you really, the six things that you really want them want to think about before you start communicating anything. And when you figure out one of those things or one or two of those things, this is what I want them to know. Then you can start crafting the communication around that so that it has a frame. Okay, I'm not going to just jump in and just, unless you have to, you're not going to jump in and just say, I need this. You know, okay, this is what I need. Okay, how can I emotionally engage my listener or my reader so that they are primed to get that information, then give them the information, and then remind them that they told them. That old adage is always so true. Tell them what you're going to tell them, then tell them that you told them. And that's a really important part of any communication.
Thanks. And I noticed on your website, you refer to compassionately frank feedback. What do you mean by this? And how does a person do this?
Yeah. Well, every person doesn't have that skill. It's like one of those things that I consider my superpower in a way, because I've been able to tell people almost anything and I've never gotten smacked in the face. And so compassionately frank to me means I'm not going to sugarcoat anything for you because I care about whether you like me or I care about whether it's going to hurt your feelings. Because if you're in the room with me ready to get feedback on your communication skills, I have to give you all of it or else it's not effective. And so the compassion part is I only tell you this because I care about you getting better. And a lot of times the only thing I will hold back on in a feedback session is if I know that that person cannot do better in that particular instance or for a very long time. I mean, there are some specific things, there are some physical challenges that people have, there are some issues or even just communication issues that they have. And I know that in one session or three sessions, they may not be able to overcome that. So I'm not going to bring it up. But if I know that I have a way for them to start dealing with this issue, then I will say, look, you know, your voice is really nasally here. And when I hear a nasal voice or when your listener hears a nasal voice, it's going to have this effect on them. therefore let's work on our breathing and work on breathing in the diaphragm so that it gets better. Mm-hmm. So that's compassion, because I'm giving you the why, and then I'm giving you the how to make it different.
Yeah. And how do people respond to it? How have you seen them receiving it? Because often we teach classes on delivering it, but what have you noticed when they receive that feedback?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm really fortunate in that most people do not do a pushback. Every once in a while, like I remember just recently, I was working with someone I was giving him an opening that was more engaging, and he was one of those heady people that wanted, but they know all this. So I was giving them this whole thing. It's like, and so finally I just had to say, look, you have to trust me. And one of his PR person was in the room at the same time. And she, and what I do is also I videotape. And so what happens is at the end of the videotape, I'll say, okay, just do it. Trust me. Videotape it. Play it back. And then they see, oh, okay, that makes sense. The other thing is I usually only give you things that are going to make you feel better. And that's the other part about compassion. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, if you're doing this stodgy opening or this stodgy data driven thing, it usually doesn't feel great. And when you switch it up the way that I give you to switch it up, you start to feel, it's almost like something releases in your body, even because our bodies and our minds are so connected, something releases and you feel more open and you feel better. And that's what people then experience. And then they can say, oh, okay, I get it.
So I can think of one instance in the past 6 months that I've delivered, I will say, Robin's compassionately frank feedback to someone. And I never knew if they really took it to heart. And it's 6 months later and they're actually just starting to put it into action. So they really need to be ready. And maybe they've just, you know, we make the assumptions that they were aware of that feedback.
Right.
And I learned that they weren't.
Yeah.
And that there was anxiety behind it. And as a fellow leader, I thought, you know, I made this assumption. So I caught myself in my own assumptions.
Yes.
I know as a coach, you know, to move through those assumptions and help challenging others, but also learning and being in progress myself.
Yeah.
To realize that we don't know what's going on the other side, but when they're ready and actually hear the feedback, and, you know, even if it is 6 months later, if they're acting on it, they can see how it's going to benefit them as a leader.
Yeah, that's such a great point, because all of this is so cumulative. You don't know where it's going to land or when it's going to show up. And that's one of the things that I say, especially at my workshops and stuff, I'm going to give you a lot of things. Yeah. And maybe 6 months down the line, it'll start making sense. It may not make sense right now. You may not be able to do it right now. So that really is an excellent point.
And it's exciting to me seeing these leaders suddenly take these bold action steps, because that's when we start seeing massive results.
Yeah.
Leaders need to create compelling visions regarding their businesses and their organization. How can individuals use their tone of voice to their advantage?
Yeah. I hit on voices a little bit, but the nonverbals are so incredibly essential to any type of communication. So the voice and the body language are huge. And what I find with a lot of tone of voice in business leadership is there's this epidemic of this monotone, but not quite monotone sound, which I have dubbed the whatever tone. You know, and it sounds like everything is just so boring and da 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 da. And it's just like, and it's almost as if, I know I'm boring, I know you're busy, I know you don't have a lot of time for this, I'm just going to work, drone on until I'm done with what I have to say. And that is not an empowering tone of voice. It doesn't engender passion or enthusiasm or anything else like that. And so I really feel like leaders need to take it upon themselves to tune up their tone of voice and make it sound like it's an exciting thing. Give it some enthusiasm. Give it some passion. Give it some power behind it. Because without that, it's really, really hard to motivate people, because the voice is so connected to the message. And when it sounds disconnected, unfortunately, with the way the human brain works, we're going to believe what we hear the tone of the voice or the what we see before we believe the content of what's being said. So you can be saying that's very encouraging, enthusiastic, exciting things. But if it doesn't sound exciting to my ear and to my brain and to the little monkey that lives in the back of my brain, I'm not going to get excited by it. I'm just not.
Yeah. And sometimes people misinterpret that tone as well as the person's intent. What ways can you, our listeners, ensure that their tone of voice and message are in alignment?
Yeah. Yeah. And there are a couple of things that way. A lot of it is, if you're really not sure, so much of it is you can record yourself and listen back, because that's what I would do, or find a coach that will help you to do that. Because I used to believe that if your heart is in the right places, if your intention is in the right place, then it's going to come across in your voice. But our voice becomes so habitualized by things that's not always the case. And I've had clients that, you know, I know that they are passionate, but they don't sound it. So it really becomes an exercise in hearing and forcing them. And I have exercises that I use for the voice that I have people read and read really powerful film scripts or something like that, so that they can start to hear in their voices the changes that are really effective. And then as we record it, and so funny, because I'll say, okay, push it. I want you to do it as if you're a bad actor. And I'll record it and I'll play it back. And they're like, wow, I thought I was having so much energy, but I really don't. So it's like, we really don't know what we don't know unless you hear it back. And so then they see that even when they thought that they were pushing it, they sounded kind of below normal. So then they have to amp it up even more. And then they can sound like, okay, this sounds like an enthusiastic person.
Yeah.
And so then you get to realize where the benchmarks are.
Okay. Networking is one of the ways that to market our business. You know, people go to many networking events and to support their business and organization's purpose, making sure that people get to know who they are. The elevator pitch is getting mixed reviews. What do you think is the most important way to communicate with someone when you're meeting them for the first time? Because so many times I've gone to events and people are playing blackjack. They're literally just saying, you need my card, you need my card, you need my card. I'm like, whoa.
I know. That is like the kiss of death. I've actually had people not even say that, but just walk around the room and hand out their card. And I'm like, really? Really? So first of all, the elevator pitch is interesting. I'm going to have a product coming out soon, which is a video series on ditching the elevator pitch. That's what it's called, ditch the elevator pitch, because first of all, the name, I need people to ditch the name, because words matter. And as soon as you hear elevator pitch, you think, oh, somebody's going to like try to sell me something. So I've renamed it and I've created my own name, which is the intromercial. So it's part introduction, part commercial. So it's your intromercial. So I teach people how to create a 6-step intromercial. And the other part about that is, with anything, the intromercial or the elevator pitch, some people call it value proposition, it's not like you go and you dump it. You don't dump an entire meal full of information on your listener. What you want to do is you want to dish it out in bite-sized servings. And so one of the most important parts of that is to find out as much as you can about your listener before you start to dish or dump, especially dump. And so one of the things that you can start with is just asking questions, you know, just asking questions about them, or making small talk. Small talk, because it's like most of the time you get stuck with questions, and the question then becomes, what do you do? And then that leads to like elevator pitch exchange, you know? Yeah. But what you can do is start with small talk, which then you get to understand the rhythm of that other person, how they speak, what their sense of humor is, what, you know, all of those types of things. And then you can start to gauge which ingredient of your intromercial you're going to dish out when the time comes. And so I love having this very short, snappy thing. If somebody asks you what you do, tell them very short, not your job title, because that means nothing to most people. But a little snippet of, like, for instance, one of my snippets is, if somebody, if I wanted to do something really, really quick, I can say I work with people who want to be more powerful, engaging, and confident communicators. And so that usually will start asking questions. Or I might even stop at, I work with people who want to be powerful communicators. Or sometimes I'll just say, I help people speak better. You know, it's just really those short things, and then find out, engage the level of interest until you can get into more detail of what it is that you do. And really have that detail at the ready, which is not, again, the results details, but the emotional engagement part. It's like, what kind of stories, what kind of analogies can you use to really spark the person's attention and emotions and get them involved emotionally in what it is that you do so that they can visualize it.
And that's, it's really about stepping into who you are and sharing that essence of you. I like how you said that it's a, you know, that infomercial kind of exchange, that it's more of a dialogue. It's a conversation. Right. It's not about, hey, let me tell you about you. And then hearing what they have to say and say, I'm in. You want to create that intrigue that you want to draw somebody in by making your statement.
Yeah. You want to draw them in. And also you want to create a relationship, because people want to do people, visit with people that they have relationships with. It's like, and it's not about the close all the time. A lot of times you go to networking events because you want to win business. It's like right now, it's like, I often tell people, it's like, go to a networking event with another option. I'm going to meet 10 people that wear red. You know, I'm going to share this story with 5 people. And that can be a goal just as much, because if you go there to win business, then your head is in a whole completely different space. Mm-hmm. And people will remember you if you are memorable in other ways as well. You know, some of the best networking events that I've gone to, I never really have to talk about what it is I do, because they start to like me as a person. Mm-hmm. Then when they find out what I do, then they'll follow up with me months, weeks, sometimes years later.
Yeah.
Because I didn't try to sell.
Yeah. And later on, you come top of mind that they got to know, like, and trust you in the process.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what are some of the wordless cues or body language that people should pay attention to? So let's use the networking as an example.
Yeah, the perfect one for networking is look at people's feet. And I have a video on YouTube that talks about networking, and I think it's about the feet. I can't remember. There's a series of videos that I have done on body language. And one of them is about feet. And so the interesting thing is your feet tell you where you want to go. And your body and mind are so connected that the emotions trigger the body language, and the body language triggers the emotion. So if you're standing in a networking event and you look at a group of people and you look down at their feet, and their feet are all mirroring each other, they're completely parallel to each other and facing each other, that's a group of people that are really engaged in each other and in the conversation that they're having. And that may not be the group of people that you want to infiltrate, because they probably won't be open to it. However, if you're walking in a networking situation and you look at the people's feet and there's this openness, and there, like, there's a open part, one foot is pointing out towards the crowd, that's a group that is open to new members. You know, you can go and then talk to them. And so that's one of those cues. And the other thing that you always want to be cognizant of is not hiding your torso, because that is one of those vulnerable open spaces. And when you have your torso unhidden, I mean, of course you have to put clothes on it, but when you have your torso open and your arms open, it shows that you're a much more open person and much more trustworthy and much more trusting. So that's one of the things that you can do to get more attention on you. Another one is just a slight raise of the eyebrows is one of those things that raising of the eyebrows is one of those ways of saying, hi, I'm here, without invading them or infiltrating them. It's a nice greeting. Those are some of the small things.
Yeah. Those are really important, because sometimes when, you know, if people have their feet going the other way, you're like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. Also, when you're talking to somebody and you look down at their feet, okay, a lot of times we don't notice that the other person really wants to leave. And so if, you know, you start seeing both feet pointing towards the door and you're still talking, it might be time to wrap up.
Yeah. Those subtle clues, hey?
Yeah.
So what book has influenced you the most in your life?
You know, that's such a hard question because I read a lot. And I read, you know, I read a lot of business books, and I read portions of business books. I have about five reading at the same time. So I think what I would say is probably the first book that I read about brain science. And I'm not even sure which one it is, but one of them is like when I started getting my neurolinguistic programming practitioner certification, one of the people that I worked with had a book on your brain, and I thought I knew it, and now I don't remember it. But one of the books that I really liked lately is called Your Brain at Work, and it talks really about the brain science behind what happens in the office situation and at home. So that's really interesting. All the books by the teachers of NLP that I had, Sean Carson, his name is, has written some really great, easy to digest books on brain science. And I feel like all of those books have influenced me so much because, again, back when I was 8 years old, one of the things I wanted to do was be a psychiatrist. You know, it's like I thought, oh, I really want to be a psychiatrist. So, you know, I went to high school. I was like, of course, when I was in high school, I started reading Freud. And I've always had that thought that this whole thing about the brain, and really been very curious about the brain and why things happen. And now here we are now in the cutting edge of so much neuroscience, so much brain science, that I'm so fortunate to have all these books available that can now feed me.
Well, I have to say I'm excited because we're in the right place because I love neuroscience.
Yeah.
I love positive psychology, and I love learning how it really influences a person's success, and especially in the communication field.
Totally. Yeah, so that has really bolstered everything that I teach and do.
If you had one message that you wanted to ensure that our audience hung on to, what would it be?
It would be to dig deeper than you think you need to find the miraculous uniqueness of you. And it goes back to the beginning of our conversation that we grow up and we start getting these labels and we start going down these paths that we think are the right paths. And I think that there's so many other layers down there of the specialness of what it is that we have to give. You know, it's like if you're in a middle management position, it doesn't mean that you have to go out and get a new job because there's no growth there. But find out what it is that you do best in that situation. How are you influencing people? Is the office slightly better because of you? What are you actually giving to society in the world at large? And dig down and use that to be a better person. I really feel like so many of my clients, when they come to me, it's like they're only scratching the surface of how incredibly great they are. And one of the things that I wrote a newsletter blog post the other couple of weeks or months ago about digging for gold. You know, it's like, so I feel like I'm a gold digger, I called it, because like there's so much, there's gold in their hills, and we're not utilizing all of it all the time. And we believe what other people are saying about it. We believe what we've done in the past is the top of what we can do. And like you were saying before, there's just so much potential out there. There's so much more that we can do. And so I really feel that a lot of times we're not the ones to see it. So that's why coaches and teachers and all the other people that you can clam on to say, yes, you can do better. You can be better. You can use this skill that you forgot about. You can talk about that skill that you completely neglect, but is really powerful and helps me be who I am because you're who you are. And so I don't know if that makes sense, but that's what I mean.
Well, it's really about getting people to step into what they're capable of. And And I'd like to ask you, I know it's off our questions, but I want to ask you, and to share with us one leader that you have worked with that you've seen a significant transformation and kind of a description of where they started and what journey you took them on and to what they have stepped into now. I would love to hear about that.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Let's see. Let me go back because I have several. Oh, wow. There are so many. I guess one woman came to me. I mean, there are two. There's one woman I really want to talk about because she came to me and she already had a really fantastic job. And it was great, but she hated public speaking. She was in marketing, so she hated public speaking. She still got nervous. And so one of the things that we did was, you know, we worked my usual way, and I was still not, I thought that there was some kernel that wasn't there. So I kept pushing and asking questions. So finally, she called me up and she said, okay, there's something I haven't told you. And there was this huge thing about her past that she was living in shame around.
Mm.
And she told me what it was. And one of the reasons why, and she wanted to sort of come out of the closet with it, but she was afraid that it would affect her current job situation. Because if she were to start talking about it, and she was actually approached by some news outlets to tell her story, her real story. And so she was afraid that when she was approached by these news outlets that her current bosses would not accept it.
Mm.
And so one of the things that I did was I said, you know, you have to do this because it was very appropriate. And I'll tell you because I won't know who she is, but she was, turned out that she had come over as an undocumented citizen as a child. And she lived with that shame for many years before she got her papers. And so what I was able to, so I said, no, you have to tell them. And so here's what we're going to do. And we spent time on the phone, time and time, writing out a script of how she could flip and reframe how to approach this with her bosses. You know, because she was coming from, I'm so ashamed. And they're going to judge me from that. And if you're coming from that, that's exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So what I did was everything that she was ashamed of, I found a way to reframe it to make it a positive for them. You know, it's like to find out the positive and to also not neglect or negate all of the incredible work she's done on herself and in herself and in her career since all of that happened. You know, so to remind her of that and then to flip that switch of how she did it. And it's almost as if once she got that script down, it's like you can sort of see and feel the sigh from her. It's like, you know, and she just felt so much better. And so she called me up and after she had that conversation with her bosses and they were perfectly fine with it. And she just felt like she was on cloud nine. You know? She could really just go and be herself. You know, and so she did the interviews and she has other interviews that she's doing and coming up. And so those are that's one of the ways. And you know, other clients are just, when I saw this one Israeli guy who he thought he had an accent issue and he was really worried about that. And he had this really, and he had this huge company and he always had other people speak. And there was this one big conference and somebody who called me and said, look, we want him to do the speech. And he's like, no. It's like, no, I can't. And so what I did was I talked to him and I pulled out all the things that, and I just had to, again, remind him of how great all the work he said, how great he is. How, okay, yeah, you're not this showy kind of speaker. It was an IT type of business. So
yeah,
he was really, really bright. He had an accent, so he was worried about that. And we created this persona of him, and we actually used sort of a James Bond type thing because it was related or something. So we created a deck and we created an intro that was so powerful and so unique. And I'm telling you, this incredible superstar came out. I couldn't, I had these I had the before, and when he sent me the after, it's like, oh my God. You know, because he had just gone from, no, I can't do this, and yes, the accent was bad, and yes, this was this. But by the time we finished working, it was like, whoa, he was a superstar.
That transformation to superstar.
Yeah.
Is huge. It's huge to watch somebody really open up into who they are meant to be.
Right. Yeah. And that's the most exciting part of the work.
Yeah. Well, Robin, as we were talking, three words came to mind, bold, brilliant, and beautiful. So I want to thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and expertise here with the Millionaire Woman Show. I want you to just share with everyone how they can keep in touch with you, learn about your books, everything that's going on in your world.
Yeah, please keep in touch. You can go to my website, which is speaketc.com, www.speaketc.com. Actually, you could also go to robinhatcher.com, same website. robinhatcher.com is easier to remember with a Y, Robin with a Y. And just reach out to me if you like what you heard. I'm running a coaching special that I can share with you. And if you want the book portion, the ebook portion of the Ditch the Elevator Pitch, please email me or I'll send a link where you can download that. It's an ebook that gives you the step-by-step guide of how to create a delicious infomercial. And then you'll be on the list for when I do the video portion, which will include a Q&A so you can get in touch with me. If you just want to email me, just email me at Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, at speaketc.com.
Excellent. So thank you to everyone. Thank you, Robin, for sharing everything that you have today. It has been a spectacular interview. My favorite part is the compassionately frank feedback because, you know, sometimes we're afraid to give that feedback, but if we know it's coming from the intent of helping someone,
right,
when they're ready, they're going to take it, they're going to run with it. And for our folks here on the Millionaire Woman Show, if you want to watch our video interview on YouTube, it's on YouTube. But otherwise, it's going to be on all your podcast platforms. And we are so excited to bring to you leaders, thought leaders in our industries who are helping people get rich from the inside out using principles of leadership, business, and human potential. Go over and subscribe to the Millionaire Woman Show. Give us a 5-star high five. Write us a review. Email me at Deborah@DeborahKozowski.com. Let us know what you've learned from these podcasts. Share these podcasts with other people so that they can gain the same learning that you are. So until we meet again, remember, as Mahatma Gandhi said, be the change you wish to see in the world and go out and make your day great. Take care, everyone.